Good morning, Lee.
Howdy there, Tara.
You know, I wonder what it's like for these experts to be wrong all of the time. At some point, that's not an accident. Okay? Like, you know, we got experts. We got them on TV. They come out and commentate on all the economic news, all of that. And it, you know, I mean, you expect someone to be wrong, right? They're human.
Eventually. But
they have amassed an incredible record of being wrong all the time. It's almost as if when it comes to, oh, I don't know, Trumpnomics, it's almost as if there's something else going on here besides telling the public what's going on financially. From Fox Business, they got as hung up in this as CNBC and CNN and Bloomberg and all the big lying business outlets. 100% wrong. If you can find anybody that got this right, whether it's their host, their anchors, their guests, please send it to me. I'll play it. Again, as I've been saying, if you had said back in the week of liberation, the day of liberation, Trump tariff day in April, if you'd said, well, you know, I think it's going to work out great, that would have been your last time on American financial television. You'd have to join everybody who got this rightly on X, but you wouldn't be allowed to be on television. At some point, we have to reconcile these people are not here to give you financial advice or honest coverage of anything. They're there to help the Democrats and the globalists. What you're watching on your news television is not real. It's as fake as COVID was, as fake as the Russia collusion hoax was. It itself is fake. I want to remind you of what it sounded like. And by the way, obviously I'm setting up to go to Trump 3% GDP growth. That wasn't supposed to happen. This is just back in April. It's only July.
This is an economic Armageddon that's coming for the U.S. consumer and the economy.
You see all of his cabinet members, his other aides, going on TV and you know, glorifying the tariff-mageddon we have just been through and are still going through.
President Trump shrugs as the stock market plunges and the dollar weakens amid warnings that his tariffs could throw the United States into a recession.
He's cruel. He doesn't care. He wants to hurt people. He just wants Biden back. And it went on and on and on and on.
It was very clear that these tariffs are going to be passed on to American consumers and are going to slow down the economy.
The best hope for our economy is that there will be enough damage to markets quickly that the administration is led to correct.
They have created havoc in our economy, economy that was improving, and now we have people out there scared to death.
Well, I mean, we do have people in there, in the newsrooms, at the business channels, but Lee, what about the people out there who are scared to death, those people? Were they really out there? No. What these people were doing in these two montages I just played for you, they were trying to burn down the economy. They were trying to scare people badly enough they would dump their stocks. They were trying to crash the stock market. In fact, they already telegraphed what they wanted. They said this was going to be April. They reported it as fact, the worst month in terms of stock market crashes since the Great Depression. That was a banner on Drudge. It was coming. There was nothing that could be done about it. The world was going to end. And again, they were acting as economic arsonists, Lee. They were trying to burn it down. And folks, if this had been 2020, 2021, when the FBI still had a headquarters inside of X, it could censor anything they wanted to, they may have pulled this off. But after the Biden regime, no one believes them anymore. After the hoaxes, the Russia hoax, the COVID hoax, the shot hoax, on and on and on, the Hunter Biden laptop hoax, everyone's like, yeah, blah, 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 right, whatever. Who got this right? I love this part of the story, Lee. Mom and pop investors, 97%, took a look at that hysteria and went, they're lying. And they hung on to their stock. I love this clip. It's from Scott Bessent on why the market didn't crash, because those lunatics, those economic arsonists I just played for you, no one believes these globalist hacks anymore. And here's Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary, explaining why the market did not crash, because mom and pop did not dump the stocks in their 401k.
The Vanguard, one of the largest money management firms in America, said that over the past 100 days, 97% of Americans haven't done a trade. And in fact, individual investors have held tight while institutional investors have panicked. So individual investors trust investors trust President Trump.
Megan. What they were trying to do was effect a robbery, get mom and pop to dump their stocks at a low so that they, you know, dump them at a low, dump them at a lush, right? And what, how did that work out? Good news for you if you didn't listen to these hacks. Here's CNN Business Now. Here's what this sounds like now after the European trade deal.
Is this a fantastic deal then struck by Donald Trump and just terrible negotiation on the part of the EU? I mean, how do you...
I think that's an accurate assessment. Obviously, it's better than not having any deal at all, at 30% or something. But this is really a wasted opportunity, I think, for the EU and absolutely a victory on behalf of the Trump administration.
Here's Josh Hammer, Newsweek senior editor. He's on Sky News stammering.
You know, Rita, Donald Trump is the only man that I've ever seen who flies over to Scotland, the home of golf, to play some rounds of golf with his family to usher in a new Trump-affiliated golf course redesign. And he comes home bagging one of the greatest, most historic trade deals in the history of modern commerce. I mean, this is truly historic stuff. And, you know, whether it's really getting the better of Ursula von der Leyen and the European Union bureaucrats, whether it's the massive, massive trade deal of the United States just reached with Japan about a week and a half ago. We had a deal with the Philippines in the interim. That kind of flew under the radar. By the way, holding trade aside just for a second there, he also reached a ceasefire deal between Thailand and Cambodia. I mean, this is just like, it's just a rapid fire, win after win after win. I mean, I have never experienced, frankly, this much winning from a president in my life.
What do you think of all this?
It is just stunning. I mean, it's like, drinking from the fire hose, all the stuff that is going on here. And it's, you know, Europe didn't have an option because the thing, whether or not, you know, this country is strong financially or not, we are still the world's largest consumer market.
Yeah. And there was, it turns out, a lot of power in that.
Yes.
If people want to be a part of it.
If you want to be able to sell your goods or services here, you've got to deal with Donald Trump.
Yeah. And India is facing that problem right now. They're going to have to make a choice.
They're going to have to make a choice between supporting the U.S. or Russia.
They are.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's what trading partners do.
Exactly. And I had somebody make a comment. We can't just dictate to the world who they buy from.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Yeah, we can. You know what? Hey, we are India's number one trading partner, okay, in terms of we buy more of their stuff than anybody else. If they don't want to sell it anymore, you know, do you know what their per capita GDP is? You know, in other words, the average amount people make in India? $3,000.
Yeah, I was fixing to say it had to be low because they have such a huge population and their economy is nowhere near as large as ours, although it is significant.
And look, you know, they're free to do what they want. They, you know, they want to trade with Russia.
Yeah.
How much stuff you sell to Russia, India? Oh, that's between 2-3% of your exports. Good luck with that. Mm-hmm. Good luck with that. You guys going to go, what? You're going to take it for your per capita income from 3,000 down to 2? Good, fine. Yeah, be my guest. Whatever. We're not going to make you do anything with missiles. And here's the thing. We spent almost four decades projecting U.S. power with blood and missiles.
Yeah.
And that was mostly because a lot of these contractors and ordnance manufacturers wanted to get rich. And we didn't use our economic power at all. And Trump is just crushing it out there using our economic power. And India's about to experience a great amount of pain. Because you know what? I have had it with it. My blood boils when I see India. My blood boils. Because you want to talk about an economic sleeper cell, okay? Beginning of the month. Of July, they are meeting at a confab with the BRICS countries, mainly China and Russia, plotting to bring down our currency. Who do they think they are? I mean, do you know what Donald Trump just did for them? He forced Apple to move out of China, their supply lines, because they're stealing everything, all the technology, their phones, they're embedding in our phones, all of that. And he made them move the whole production line to India. Instead of India saying, oh, thanks, that's really cool, they go to a meeting to plot to bring down our currency? Screw you. Who do you think? We bring half your country here on H-1B visas. Maybe we need to rethink that. Maybe we need to find a better country to do that with that's not trying to steal our currency. I'm sure there's former Soviet republics where every average PhD speaks three languages. They're all engineers. Let's get some of them over here. Who do you think you are? And so he has just slapped them with those tariffs. Lee, you've heard me. I wanted to slap India with tariffs so badly. And he did. And he says, look, you want to keep buying Russian oil out the back door and plot to destroy our currency? Fine. You're going to have access to our markets. You have to pay a premium. We'll buy from someone else. All without firing a shot. It's fabulous. And the old Washington way was, well, they just want to destroy our currency. Maybe they'll succeed. Hey, let's just ignore that. Let's just do nothing. Let's just sit by and do an editorial every once in a while in Bloomberg about how this might end badly. And then, you know, watch, maybe our currency will fall, maybe it won't, but we won't do anything because it'd be gauche. It'd be embarrassing if we were to help ourselves. Well, Trump got up off the sidewalk after being sucker punched and said, you know what, we're going to help ourselves. And he punched back twice as hard. And look at the economic prosperity that comes with it. I'm so fired up. I'm so excited. And unleashing our energy as he just did over the last two days, getting rid of the single most destructive climate change barrier, regulatory barrier that Obama put up, just wiping it off the books so that we can unleash American energy. And wait till I tell you where that energy is going. I'll put it all together because, folks, this is not just one policy or one story. It is a massive economic policy of the remaking of America. Finally. Yeah, I was right yesterday. I told you she's in. Nancy Mace is in the governor's race. I knew that because they called me to schedule a special announcement on the show next Tuesday. So I like to see that. I like to see a candidate call me and say, hey, can I come on the show for an interview? You can ask me anything. And we want to schedule it on Tuesday of next week because a big announcement is going to be on Monday afternoon. They're going to come in here in the morning with Nancy Mace. So she's in the governor's race. And I say, good. She's going to spice it up. We need a flamethrower in that race. And she certainly is that. I think it'd be pretty easy. I think it'd be pretty boring otherwise. It'd be too easy for these people to slide by. So I'm glad she's in there. It's going to make it lively. It's going to make it fun. She will sling some mud. We're going to get to see who's who breaks under pressure. And all of that. And you know what I like to see? I have to say, credit-wise, if you've listened to this show, you have not heard the governor on this show. This goes all the way back to Bobby Mack. He won't come on. He wants nothing to do with us here in the upstate. That has been the attitude from the governor's mansion. And folks, you hear me trash the governor. It didn't have to be that way. We invited him on. And, you know, my boss, my program manager came with this idea that, hey, let's get him on. A number of years ago when Nikki Haley was going to become the ambassador for Donald Trump and he was the heir apparent, he had almost no political record. And I was a little stressed because, I do a tough interview. You know that. That's why a lot of people don't show up here. And I'm nice, but I'm tough. I ask the questions you'd want me to ask. And I was a little stressed out on that one because I was afraid people were going to think I was giving him a softball interview because I didn't have anything on him. He had no political record. He'd taken a couple of positions on the gas tax, most of them ones we like, and that was it. So we called him up. We said, hey, come on the show. Sorry, we're busy. Well, maybe next week. Oh, we're busy this month. Okay. How about next month? Busy. Okay. At that point, I turned it over to my boss and I just thought, you know what? I'm going to let him handle it. I mean, surely you want to come on the Voice of the Carolinas with the talk show host of the year for South Carolina. I mean, you wouldn't talk to us, right? I mean, because at that point, my show had won show of the year and station of the year. We're the highest rated talk show station in the entire state. We have the largest audience in the whole state. I mean, surely you're not going to diss the entire Greenville market, dude. And we were at the point of, okay, it's February. Can you come on in May? That's where my boss was, negotiating with these people. I just stepped back. No, we're busy. And here's the thing. I'd never picked on the guy because I didn't have anything to use. There was no record. That is the arrogance of Columbia. I'd never said a negative word about him. Again, I didn't have anything to use. I mean, he had no record. And he has never once come on this show. And they care so little about you, that wing of Columbia, that folks, when we had the Table Rock fire, almost a week went by. People's homes are being, you know, people are being at, like, you know, evacuated. It's a national news story. Fox News covering it. Governor didn't show up. He didn't show up, so started lighting his rear end up. Like, you don't even care. I mean, like, this side of the state does exist, you know. And he finally showed up, grudgingly. That's Columbia. They don't care. They don't care. So I'm really glad to see what a difference. We're going to actually have a governor, maybe. We have Alan Wilson, who it constantly is texting me, hey, come on your show. And I have grilled him. I've thrown everything but the kitchen sink at him. You know, over the last year, he's asked to be on the show. Now, Nancy Mace is asking to be on the show, and they don't put any qualifiers on what I ask. It means they want a connection with you, and that's good. They're not afraid of the hard questions. And you see what a disaster McDisaster has been. He's the kind of governor who doesn't want questions, doesn't believe he should have to answer them, doesn't care about you. Can't even show up when a place burns down. Terrible governor. Oh, awful. What a waste. What a waste. So let's see where we are. So far, I am working on getting Pam Evatt on the show. I haven't managed to do it yet, but I haven't gotten a no. So that's good. There's still an open line of communication there. I know she's been on some other shows on this station, but we ask the hard questions on this show. And everybody knows it's the state. So, you know, if she wants to come on, then I'm going to say the same great things about her, that she's at least willing to talk to you. Doesn't consider us the redheaded stepchildren up here. That'd be a nice break from Henry McDisaster. It would be a nice change. So we'll see if she will come on the show to answer questions. And look, my door is still open to Henry. He wants to come on the show. Give him a platform. He can have an hour if he wants it. Say whatever he wants. I'm going to ask the hard questions, though. And he's always felt he is not entitled to have to answer questions. It's been a disaster for the state. They got him. Breaking overnight. This creep. James Andrew McGann, 28, of Springdale, murderer of the two parents on that hiking trail in Arkansas, the Devil's Den State Park. Killed the parents in front of their two girls, 7 and 9. There's something to that. You know what he did for a living? Fifth grade teacher. Yeah, they actually arrested him while he was getting his back to school haircut. What a creep. But there's something very interesting about this case to me as a former crime reporter. The answer to the question, is murder obsolete? Look how quickly they got him. This is a guy who was obviously factoring in technology. This is a guy who's obviously studied the downfall of other murderers by technology. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. One of the most pioneering uses of tech was actually, to his credit, by Attorney General Alan Wilson in his office in this state, right here in South Carolina, in the Alex murder trial. What did him in was his Suburban, his OnStar data. They went in, they got it. Sorry, my phone goes off like everyone else's. They went in, they got it. Took a very long process of subpoenaing that and getting it. It wasn't easy. And they were able to track his vehicle's movement, speed, and location on the night of June 7th and destroy his alibi. Yes, he was at his mom's house, but not for 30 to 40 minutes, but just 20 minutes. They had to show he drove very high speed to get to and from the scene. Did him in. Put him at the scene. All of it done with the car. Look at Brian Koberger. Clearly studied that. Koberger's white Hyundai Elantra. Did him in. Captured on surveillance video. That's important. They didn't get the license plate. That's what's so crazy. And they still got him. Caught him on surveillance video circling the area near the victim's house in the early morning hours of the murders. Footage showed the vehicle approaching the house multiple times before speeding away minutes later. Again, they didn't even have the plate and they got it. They put out an APB for it. That crossed state lines because it was within, you know, the area. And that was their first hit. He had, it turned out, obviously registered it because he had to park on campus because he was an assistant professor. Cell phone records and surveillance footage would later place Koberger and his vehicles in the vicinity of the crime. So you go commit a murder, you got to leave your cell phone at home. You're going to stalk the victims, you got to leave your cell phone at home. They have him stalking them for months. So obviously this guy has watched this. Look what he did. He goes to a park where there are no cameras. And this is something my husband's been trying to, you know, beg me and my daughter to stop hiking. Because he thinks these people are going to realize that you can't, murder's obsolete. You can't do it anymore. Not in a city. Too many cameras, too many Ring cameras. And they're going to move into the parks. And the backcountry and rural areas are going to become very dangerous for hunters like this. And sure enough, here's Arkansas, former FBI agent Nicole Parker on the Arkansas killing and why he chose the place he did.
I hate to say it, but you are not safe anywhere. And I don't believe in living in fear, but I believe that we always have to have our head on a swivel. This was a part of the park that there was really no cell phone reception. This was a beautiful place. And so that would be a prime target for them. They can't even call 911 if they wanted to. But again, this individual was allegedly new to the area. Let's see what comes of this investigation. But again, my heart goes out to this family. My condolences. These children's lives.
So this is a guy who obviously studied the Koberger case. Probably studied the Murdaugh case. He goes, okay, and he covers his license plate. She can't see the plate. Goes to a remote area, no cell phone. That solves another problem. Now let's see how they got him. And this case was critical to me to answer this simple question, is murder obsolete? They brag in China, by the way, that it is. You could look that up. It's fascinating. They have over 1 billion government cameras in that country. That doesn't even count the private cameras. That's just the network of government cameras. They say, can't do crime anymore. It's impossible. I believe that. And so we live in this surveillance society, and that is really bad. I mean, it's probably 75% bad because our limits our freedoms, and it can very easily. But there is an upside. There's a silver lining, and it's this. And so I asked the question over the last couple of days, you know what they asked people to do? Let's see how they got him, by the way. They asked people to do it. They were going to track him mile by mile. They said, people, if you got a Ring camera, he probably passed by that route. Look on your Ring camera. See what you got. They put out the description of the car. It was a Mazda. How do you catch him then? You follow him. The first time I ever read this was an article in the LA Times. It was amazing. A convenience store clerk had been killed. And this was over 10 years ago. They didn't even have the high tech they do now. They followed him along his route, pulling camera video after camera video. Okay, he turned right here. We're going to go down this street, pull the cameras at these convenience stores. Okay, then we see him turning left. We're going to pull these cameras. And they went and went and went, tracked him all the way across town and got him. You can't hide anymore, not from the cameras. That's a double-edged sword. But I wanted to know, could this guy hide? How fast would they get him given his level of anonymity? If you were to leave your phone at home, as Koberger should have done, you'd have to almost at this point leave your phone at home, steal a car, or buy one, an older one. Murdaugh made that mistake. 15, 20 years old, you have to pay cash, stash it somewhere, steal a license plate, or steal the car. I mean, it's starting to get very hard to random stranger kill. That is fascinating to me. So I wrote a lot about murder. most fascinating article I ever did. I pulled 10 years worth of murder cases. I pulled every single murder case in Mecklenburg County, Charlotte for 10 years. And I wanted to know, how do people get away with murder? 50%. Right around across the top, 50%. No one had ever been charged in those cases. So I went and interviewed homicide detectives. And I asked them, and they said, well, in most of these cases where they got away with it, we have an idea who did it. And most of the cases where they got away with it, they were drug crimes. It is one drug dealer killing another drug dealer, robbing another drug dealer, back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. And he said, quite frankly, we don't spend a lot of time on those cases. The scenes are a nightmare because a lot of times it's drug dens, drug houses, drug cars. There's so much DNA in there. It's so gross. A lot of the time with that lifestyle that comes with that, he said, we can barely decode the crime scene. It's such a mess. I mean, there's blood, there's DNA, there's other DNA. And we can't do, you know, we can't, so we don't spend a lot of time on it anyway. Because whoever killed him is going to get killed next anyway. We got better things to do. We'll give it a cursory. But he said, nobody talks to us. No one cooperates. No one wants to help. We're just done. But he said, if you kill a husband, a wife, a boyfriend, a child, a family member, a friend, we're going to get you. And that's who's in the solved file. And I said, well, what about stranger killings? And he said, we get them most of the time too. It just takes us a long time. But he said the best way to get away with the stranger killings, is right in my article, is to kill someone you've never met before, you haven't stalked, and you don't know. That's what this guy did. If there's no connection between you and them, he said, we have a very hard time with it. Well, folks, that was over 10 years ago. Now, I don't know if you can stranger kill anymore. Not after the last year. This guy just tried it. He didn't last a week. They got him from nothing. And when you think about it, they got Koberger too without a license plate. Think how common a white Hyundai Elantra is. And in fact, the coverage at the time said when they were looking for it, but it's a very common car. Got him anyway. There's nowhere to hide, folks. And I would argue this kind of murder is obsolete. That's good news. These killers who are going to move into the countryside needed to see this to keep people who live in the countryside, rural areas, but also who hike and who are out there doing fun nature things safe. Going to get you anyway, even if there's no cell phone reception. Good luck. Folks, something I never leave home without. It's in my purse right now. It's Narcan. I bought it after the store, the Airbnb. Parents rented it, took their toddler for a beautiful vacation. Toddlers touch everything, as you know, because they're pulling up. And she was pulling up. She was walking and she was touching the side table. Well, it turns out that vacation rental home had been rented the week before for a drug party. There was fentanyl. Just not even like, you know, bags of fentanyl, just the dust, the remnants. She touched it. It killed her. And I went, wow, okay. You know what? I'm going to get some Narcan. And that's the stuff, you know, you just put it in your nose and you hit it. It'll save your life. As I have kids and, you know, I just thought we could be wandering around anywhere. Stores, you know, we do a lot of traveling, things like that. Who knows who will need it? Well, did you see what just happened in Berkeley County? Did you see what happened? The poor sheriff's deputy. Oh, my God. She pulls over somebody. Drug hag. I'm not trying to be, she's a drug hag. You know that look they have when they do meth where they've aged themselves like 20 years in 18 months and people share their mugshot? That's who she pulled over. You could see this woman. So she's patting her down. God bless her. They don't pay me enough to do that kind of thing. Just deal with those people. Thank the Lord there are good people out there willing to deal with them and keep us all safe. Well, she pulls over a car, tells the drug hag to get out of the car. You know what he's all, never mind. Found a folded dollar bill in the suspect's bra. Inside of it was fentanyl dust. You know, it doesn't take much. Dollar bill contained the fentanyl. Moments after handling the dollar bill, Lieutenant Kristen Riddle goes into a full-on drug overdose just from her hands touching it. You know, it's transdermal. It can go right through your hands. This is what China's killing us with. Here's what that sounded like, because they didn't really have the Narcan hand. They had a car, but they had to figure out where it was. Her fellow deputy saved her. She is full on drug overdosing. It's crazy.
Sir, I need Narcan. I need Narcan.
Where is it? Where is it? Where is it?
In my car.
Where
are
you? Central 143. LT's overdose.
How does she need Narcan?
Move. Just move.
That's the drug hag.
Where is it?
He's running. He can't find it.
Give me a minute.
I need Narcan.
Give me a minute. I got you. LT, I got
you. She's convulsing.
Narcan administered. Want another one? Ready?
Yeah. No, I don't think you did it on uniform.
I did.
Okay.
Two doses of Narcan administered.
Saved a life. That's a sheriff's deputy. She touched the fentanyl dust on the bill. By the way, if you want to know where you can get Narcan, by law in South Carolina, they have to sell it to you now. You go to any pharmacy. Sometimes they're a little confused when you're like, no, I'm going to buy the Narcan now. And they want to see ID. And I'm like, no, just sell it to me. After watching that, I've got one in my purse. I think I'm going to go pick up another one. I just like to have it on me. World in which we live, folks. Thank you, China. It's where it comes from.